At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only 10 bucks every day. Now that's finger-lickin' good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
Sowing the seeds of cannabis and sounding the praise of our favorite plant, it's time to Hemp Present. Our radio resident hemposapien Vivian McPeak will present a weekly platform for guests and listeners to Hemp Present about hemp and cannabis from the legal, activist, and reformist route. Let's round up and roll it up for our headmaster of hemp, Vivian McPeak.
My friends, I am Vivian McPeak, and this is the Hemp Present Resistance. I am the executive director of the world's largest annual cannabis policy reform event, the Seattle Hemp Fest, speaking flower to power for 29 years and founded hempfest.org. I'm also the author of the book Protestable, a 20-year retrospective of Seattle Hemp Fest, also found at hempfest.org. This show is a weekly Reefer Radio Rebellion where I speak with some of the principal risk takers, movers and shakers, and history makers of the cannabis industry, culture, and reform movement. If you have feedback or would like to suggest a guest or topic for Hemp Present, email me at hemppresent@gmail.com. Today's guest on Hemp Present is Jason Lammers. Global population growth has heightened humanity's need to master waste reduction, and manufacturers are starting to search for more sustainable materials to use in the packaging of products. One of the more pressing waste-related issues is the pervasive use of single-use plastics. Single-use or disposable plastics are used only one time before being discarded or recycled. Commonly used items such as plastic straws, soda, and water bottles. Most food packaging adds to humans producing over 300 million tons of plastics every year, and half of that plastic is used to make items for single use. The majority of these plastic items cannot be recycled, and it's reported that 8 million tons of plastic is dumped into our oceans annually, where these plastics break up into very small particles called microplastics. Sadly, the reforms that have taken place in some states permitting retail cannabis to be sold from brick-and-mortar retail establishments has only added to the problem of single-use plastics, as millions of dupe tubes and plastic packages of cannabis regularly change hands across America. And my guest is working to change some of that. Jason Lammers is the general manager at 420WholesalePack.com, the vice president of the Cannabis Alliance, and chair of the Sustainable Cannabis Committee. Jason's joined me today to talk about regional efforts to address the growing problem of single-use plastics in the cannabis industry. I know I can say it. Welcome, Jason, to Cannabis Radio.
Thanks for having me, Vivian.
My pleasure. So, Jason, things are getting pretty drastic with the plastic. How much of a problem is this single-use plastics issue? Why should we care?
Yeah, well, Vivian, you actually touched on some of my notes that I was going to touch on. You already did. That 300 million number is exactly the number I had in my notes as well. And so 150 million tons of that plastic is, as you mentioned, single use each year. So that's a huge problem. That's 150 million tons of plastic that, in my view, shouldn't be used in that fashion. So we'd really like to see that eliminated entirely. You know, I think plastic has applications in the marketplace if it's used intelligently, but the single use is definitely a huge issue, and not just for cannabis, but for the entire planet. I mean, every industry has this challenge right now, and it's should be one of the top issues that we're addressing, in my opinion.
I mean, there's severe environmental ramifications, right? I mean, not only just for fish, but these plastics build up over time and they just don't recycle back into the biosphere, right?
Yeah, I mean, traditional plastics take 1,000+ years to decompose. So that's a long time. That's definitely something that's designed to last. And so, again, you know, fixed plastic items that, you know, the half 50% of that is not single-use plastic. I think there's some applications there that are valid, but if you're talking about a single-use item that you're going to use for 30 minutes or less, and it's going to take 1,000 years to decompose, that's obviously a huge problem.
I have seen alternatives to plastic dupe tubes made out of cardboard, for example, like a sliding kind of telescopic cardboard dupe tube. Why do so many cannabis suppliers just continue to use plastics right now?
Yeah, well, so specifically regarding our joint tubes, that is a really key category in our industry. We sell, I had some headset data that I looked at a while ago showing that we sold 24 million pre-rolls in a 12-month period just in Washington State alone. And about two-thirds of those are single joints sold, if not more. And so you're looking at about 16, 17 million single joints sold in our state each year. And traditionally, that means 16 to 17 million plastic tubes that, again, are used one time to contain that joint. It's smoked and then it's thrown in the landfill. So those are some pretty big numbers that need to be addressed. And so we're definitely, we've been looking at all of those potential solutions out there. You mentioned the paper tubes. Those are a nice alternative, but there are some challenges with that. Most notably, if your paper products aren't going to typically have the same barrier protection as a plastic tube would. It also typically, your plastic's almost always the most affordable option, which is also why plastic's so widely used, is because of the affordability of it. So while there may be alternatives out there that people could use, oftentimes it means they have to spend more money or potentially compromise the integrity of their products. For a joint tube, for example, if you have a paper tube containing that joint tube and it doesn't sell very well, sits on the shelf for a while, you run the risk of it potentially drying out a bit. And so whereas a plastic tube's going to give you better barrier protection. So what we did at our company is we looked at all of these issues and tried to come up with a better dupe tube. And so we got really excited about bioplastics a few years ago, but then we did some additional digging. We saw a lot of problems with that, and it just really wasn't a scalable and viable solution for our industry quite yet. And so that's when we pivoted to recycled plastics. And while a lot of things, as I think you mentioned, aren't getting recycled, there are plastics that are being recycled, and there's quite a bit of quantity available out there. So us as a manufacturer, we looked at the idea of manufacturing a plastic dupe tube so it still has the cost competitiveness and the barrier protection, but it also is made from recycled plastic, not virgin plastic, so we're eliminating the single use of it. So while it may not be the perfect solution, it's a big step forward from what we have today.
You are on the Sustainable Cannabis Committee for the Cannabis Alliance of Washington State. Can you briefly describe the alliance and the work that you're doing on the committee?
Yeah, so the Cannabis Alliance is one of the largest trade organizations in Washington State. We're a democratically elected board, and our mission statement is DAVES, which stands for Dedicated to the Advancement of a Vital, Ethical, and Sustainable Industry. And the Sustainability Committee that I chair started 2 years ago to address specifically packaging waste issues, but since then we've expanded our scope to include all areas of sustainability, including energy, water, and plant waste issues.
Wow, that is really awesome. Historically, the cannabis culture presumably, had a higher environmental awareness, kind of being an alternative culture entity or demographic. So it's really great to see a focus on the environmental impacts of cannabis legalization, because we know that there were already environmental impacts of the black market, and then some of those things kind of shifted into other areas with the legal market. You have been working, I assume, with state and local governments to some degree, looking at the issue of single-use plastics. Has there been any traction in Olympia in terms of legislation? Is there any interest, you think, from the state or local governments to deal with this issue of single-use plastics?
Yeah, I would say I'm seeing a lot more efforts from a legislative perspective just in the last few years. We started our sustainability committee back in 2018, and I would say just in the couple of years we've been a part of that, actively advocating for sustainability initiatives, we've seen just the overall scope of our legislators, I think, kind of start to look at this issue more importantly. We're seeing things like bag bans that are starting to be proposed. While that also is a step in the right direction, it obviously doesn't address all of our challenges. But I'm seeing more and more legislators starting to kind of talk about it in their campaigns now. We obviously have an election coming up, and I'm seeing a lot of the people that we talk with that are actually putting it in their stump speeches, talking about sustainability and reducing single use. So I'm hopeful that we're starting to see a shift in the mindset from that perspective. And I know one thing that we definitely saw from the LCB specifically, which is Liquor and Cannabis Board, which regulates our industry, when we got some rules changed, they specifically called out the fact that they needed to do a better job going forward in thinking about things in a sustainable fashion when they are implementing rule changes or additional new rules, so that they start thinking about it from the lens of sustainability as well, so that that's a part of the conversation going forward. So that's, so all those things I think are positive, but we obviously have a very big road, uphill road ahead of us to get it all done.
Right. Well, that's reassuring that at least there's a change in focus, and this issue's being identified as something that needs to be addressed. I'm just curious if you have any ideas on what the consumer might be able to do in order to decrease the amount of single-use plastics in retail cannabis. Any idea or feeling on what resources might be available to customers who'd rather not contribute to the problem other than just, you know, paying attention to their buying habits?
Well, I mean, I think that's probably the biggest one right there is understanding, you know, who you are purchasing from, because obviously I think we have at least still 300 or 400 potent, producer processors in our state making cannabis. And some of them are pretty sustainably focused and doing the best they can with the tools that they have, and others clearly aren't. And so I think just like anything, I think purchasing decisions is a pretty big driver of change. And so I think if we see, you know, more and more consumer demand, people asking for more sustainable solutions, then I think that that is a pretty powerful tool that a consumer can use and go in and ask questions of the store, you know, find out, you know, if they're a sustainably focused company, if you don't know that. And because there definitely are ones out there that I think are doing pretty impressive work. And again, others that are a little bit too focused on the dollars and cents and not other issues.
Right. We have, what do we have? We have a couple minutes left before the first break. What kind of successes have you had on the committee? I believe you've already initiated some important rule changes. Is that correct?
Yeah, we lobbied the LCB to address some of our packaging waste issues. We sat down with our committee and kind of brainstormed a bunch of ideas a few years back and tried to come up with ideas that we could implement that would actually have some measurable changes. Part of that process was partnering with Headset, which is a local data analytics company in the cannabis space, and we were able to get some really powerful data from our industry to effectively lobby the LCB to show them exact, you know, specific data points as to what kind of impacts we could make with these changes. And what we were able to do is essentially show them that changing our bag thickness rule from a 4 mil bag to a 2 mil bag obviously reduces 50% of your thickness in the material. So you're thereby reducing half of your materials in that bag. And so by reducing it from a 4 to 2 mil thick bag, you're reducing about 40 tons of plastic per year. And that's just with cannabis flower sales in our industry. We obviously have edible sales, infused products, dabs, other types of packaging that was a little less easy to quantify. So that 40 ton number is actually larger than that if you count everything. So it was a pretty significant reduction that we were able to do. So that was a case where we actually were able to take some regulations and change them to actually significantly reduce that plastic use. We also identified that the beverage caps in our industry were a big problem. Those were not recyclable and oftentimes were not used. And there are many other ways to provide accurate and safe dosing to consumers other than by requiring an additional wasteful piece of plastic. And so we were able to get that rule changed as well, so that now infused beverage makers can have hash marks and instructions on the side of the bottle so that you can provide accurate dosing in that way without actually requiring an additional plastic packaging cap, like a little NyQuil cap or something. The Headset information we got on our beverage industry showed that we're probably looking at about 1.5 million dosing caps per year in 2020 if we had got that rule changed. And that's growing about 20% per year in the beverage space. So that's a pretty significant reduction in our dosing caps, because obviously we now are no longer legally required to use that product in beverage products.
Wow, that's really an impressive win. I am talking to Jason Lammers, General Manager at 420WholesalePack.com and the Vice President of the Cannabis Alliance. We're going to take a quick break here, word from our sponsors and advertisers, come back with our second set.
Time to roll out for the people that let us hemp present. Hang loose. We're coming right back.
Elevate your everyday with that Shuggies feeling, with the sweet taste of Shuggies. Add a cup of Shuggies to your morning coffee. Ah, how sweet it is. Shuggies infuses cannabis and cane sugar to make it the perfect sweetener with benefits. Make your happy hour happier with a dunk of Shuggies in your drink. Order your Shuggies now at shoogies.com or find it in dispensaries throughout California. Whenever you crave a little sweet, pick up Shuggies, the sweet, sweet take anywhere treat. Fetch your earbuds and stay tuned for some pure pet care conversation.
Hi, it's Angela Ardolino with It's a Dog's Life, and I have Hernanda Umana joining me. We're just both so fascinated with how much we've learned since we've been in this pet industry and creating an all-natural product.
Because it's a dog's life.
I am a huge fan of my guest today, Dr. Bob Goldstein.
I have, in my experience, not seen many natural substances produce the results that CBD is producing in the animals that we are testing on.
It's a Dog's Life with Angela Ardolino, only on Cannabis Radio.
Hey, take a look at this. They're selling smart pots.
They have pot that can make you smart? Where is it?
Not that kind of pot. Smart pots are the best aeration container to grow your plants. Check this out. This is the original fabric container for faster producing, healthier plants. They're made with a superior fabric that delivers high yields. Plus, smart pots are reusable and sustainable, so you can use them over and over again, no matter if you use them indoor or outdoor.
That's very smart, but how good are they for the environment?
Smart pots are BPA-free and lead-free, so you'll always be able to ensure a pure, clean grow, and they're 100% made in the U.S. Over 28 million smart pots have already been sold, so it seems like a smart investment.
Look for smart pots in close to 2,000 garden centers throughout North America and ask for the original fabric container. Find a store near you or order yours online at smartpots.com.
We're back to Hemp Presents, only on Cannabis Radio. Now, back to our headstrong hemperer of hemp, Vivian McPeak.
And I'm talking to Jason Lammers, Chair of the Sustainable Cannabis Committee for the Washington Cannabis Alliance. Jason, I'm just curious, how much of a component to all this do you believe is the requirement for child-resistant packaging for retail cannabis products?
Yeah, so child-resistant requirements definitely have an impact. I would say most, if not all, of your child-resistant packaging solutions out there are either made of plastic or have plastic components in them. Even when I've seen some child-resistant printed boxes, oftentimes those will have little plastic dimples in them to kind of create that tough-to-open component of it. And
right.
So absolutely, that's kind of one of those tough things where there's really no realistic option where we're going to get that child-resistant removed because there's obviously concerns
sure.
about child safety.
Yeah.
But it is also very challenging to create that child-resistant package not using plastic. Now, I have seen some pretty interesting box designs that people have done where they've eliminated the plastic use. So there are some non-plastic CR options out there, but it is pretty limited. And I would say the vast majority of your CR options are going to be typically of a plastic nature.
Yeah, I find it a little bit interesting because cannabis buds have to be decarboxylated. They have to be heated before they can have an intoxicating effect, but I mean clearly it's not, you know, we're not going to change the situation with child-proof packages, but you mentioned product design, and I'm just curious what kind of interesting product designs have been coming forth in terms of alternatives to single-use packaging in the cannabis industry. Is there anything interesting or exciting being worked on that you're aware of?
Well, I mentioned earlier, we're working on a joint tube project that's going to be made from recycled plastic. So that'll be a really good solution out there for a lot of people in the near future. You know, again, I've seen a lot of hype and discussion around the bioplastic space. While that's a kind of an exciting kind of very sciencey future,
you're
I think.
You're talking about biodegradable plastics?
Yeah, I mean, I've seen a lot of hype around that, but I really haven't seen any viable solutions for the cannabis space specifically regarding bioplastics yet.
Right.
Some of the challenges around that is the cost. Typically, your bioplastics are going to be 50 to 100% more expensive, so that's a big challenge right there. But we also have a lot of kind of downstream waste issues that a lot of people don't think about. A lot of these bioplastics require industrial composting to actually work as advertised. And so if a bioplastic product doesn't get in that industrial compost facility, it's not doing anybody any favors. It's going to last for a long time as well.
Right. So, you can't just throw it in your, compost pile. Right.
Correct. Yeah. Yeah. You can't just get bioplastic dupe tubes and then throw them in your compost pile and everything's fine. And so, any kind of solution like that would need to get to an industrial compost facility. And we've talked with our industrial composter here in Washington, and the challenge there is they typically are actually after more of the food waste and organic materials as opposed to the bioplastics. They're able to accept bioplastics, but they're not exactly after them per se. And so they partnered with some solutions in the food space. One local company, Taco Time, I know, has got a really cool program where all of their packaging, I believe, is bioplastics and compostable. And so Cedar Grove picks up all that stuff from the Taco Times, but they're really getting all that food waste as well as the plastic waste, because we're obviously pretty wasteful when it comes to our food too. So that way they get the food waste, they get that in their facility with the bioplastics, and they can kind of break it all down. But they really can't just start accepting, hundreds and thousands of tons of bioplastic with nothing else, because they're ultimately making fertilizers and soils. And so they've got to have a certain blend of organic material to the bioplastic. And so that there's a lot of limitations there. And I've also seen in studies that I've looked at that companies claiming they've got rigid wall bioplastic containers really haven't been able to produce the actual science to prove that it actually degrades as advertised. So there's a lot of things we call greenwashing in this space, unfortunately.
Yeah.
Where people are making claims that are not verifiable. And so that's something to really watch out for too, is there's a lot of people that'll put a green message on it to sell it to the business to make them feel good. And then they brag about it to their customer, so the customer feels good. But at the end of the day, it hasn't solved any problems at all. So that's definitely something to be careful about.
It's somewhat ironic, because the theme of our Hemp Fest, virtual Hemp Fest that we had recently, was the green renaissance. And we're kind of looking at all the ways that cannabis hemp can play a role in a more sustainable, regenerative society. Everything as you're aware of, from hempcrete cement to its use superior to graphene in supercapacitor batteries. And yet at the same time, in recreational cannabis is generating the same kind of waste that we're talking about. And it really comes down to systems, the systems that we have in place, the processing facilities, things like that we just really need to take a fundamental redesign, I think, of the way we do things. Do you think that's going to be necessary to really address this pervasive issue of waste in our society?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, I think there's definitely going to have to be some wholesale changes that are going to have to occur. I do think that bioplastics are an exciting future, but I just don't think the science is quite there yet from a scalability standpoint. So it's definitely it's a category I'm constantly staying on top of and learning, because I do think that at some point we're going to come up with some really incredible solutions there. But it's just not, it's not widely scalable at this point. And then you brought up hemp. A lot of people ask why we're not just doing hemp packaging with everything. A lot, if not most of everybody growing hemp in America right now are growing it for CBD.
Right.
And when you're growing for CBD, you're not producing a lot of fiber, and you're maximizing the plant load for the flower. And so if you want to start creating a whole lot of fiber to create products, which is what a manufacturer like myself would need, then you've got to scale that up for fiber production. And there's cultivars that are much better for fiber than they are for CBD. And so, and I've also seen that there are some people trying to find a middle balance where they're trying to get high CBD loads, but also as much fiber as possible. So they kind of compromise. So you get a double kind of yield out of your crop. So there's a lot of that kind of going on. People are still figuring that out. But we've talked with some of the big paper companies on a national level, and they're not able to switch over to full hemp paper if they wanted to. So if they just said, we're going to hemp and getting out of trees completely, the supply chain's not in place. And so there's going to be some scaling we need to do there. And ultimately, I think we're going to need to get a lot of these hemp farmers shifted in their mindset to maybe start growing less for the CBD side and start looking at solutions so we can do more things like hempcrete and hemp fibers and things like that, because I also believe that's going to be an incredible future as well.
Of course, everything comes down to economics, and I'm just curious, are there any plans or any talks about offering business incentives or the development of less punitive tax structures that would allow smaller businesses to afford the transition into more sustainable packaging? It's really about cost at the end of the day, right?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, I say this all the time when I'm discussing the sustainability challenges is if you come up with a sustainable solution, but you're not cost competitive, are you really a disrupting product? You know, or are you just something on the shelf that's an alternative that's 50% more money and maybe 5% of the marketplace adopts it? And so being cost competitive is really important. And of course, in our industry, the fact that we have 280E structures from a tax perspective,
right.
The fact that we are the highest tax nation in the state in the nation for syntax at 37%, these things all make it really tough for our growers and our producers to even invest in sustainable initiatives, even if they wanted to, because the margins aren't there, the tax structures are so oppressive for them. And so one thing that I would really like to see in the future is some sort of tax reduction off of that 37% that's specifically structured around sustainability components, you know, and it wouldn't have to obviously be just focused around packaging. We could be incentivizing, you know, indoor growers to switch over to LED lights or solar or more sustainable packaging solutions. There's a lot of different great ideas I think that we could implement that would give some of our growers, you know, some cost incentives to do the right thing and bring some of those taxes down. Unfortunately, now with COVID and everything going on, the idea of asking for any kind of tax breaks right now is a complete non-starter.
Right.
Because states are broke and they're looking to raise more taxes, not less. And so while I think that's a cool idea down the road, I think unfortunately that also is probably something we can't even probably realistically bring up for another year or two until we get through this COVID run.
Yep. Yep. Well, it's a big issue, and well, it's certainly not going to go away. We'll be talking about single-use plastics the rest of our lives, and way into the future. We're going to go to another break. I'm talking to Jason Lammers, and we're going to come back and get our final questions in. So don't go anywhere.
Time to roll out for the people that let us hemp present. Hang loose. We're coming right back.
Let me welcome Nick Hexum from 311. We've never heard things like your music when it first came out. It's like to mix the reggae with the punk and all of that together was just such an unusual sound, and we loved it.
We realized we're not going to copy what's on the radio. At the time, it was all grunge that was on the radio. And I said, let's just stick to what we know and wait for a culture to come around to us. Hey, it's Nick Hexum from 311, and you're listening to Cannabis Confidential with Dr. Dina on CannabisRadio.com. Now I'm ready to turn the page on yesterday's and forget them. Now I'm willing to disengage to seize the day and the war.
Oh, Lady Marijuana Llama, tell you something now about a game for your phone, gonna make you say wow. The game's about the game of growing cannabis for cash. Grow the seeds, sell the bud, put the savings in the stash. Little by little your empire grows large. Put different celebrities inside your entourage. You can choose to play with Snoop or me or Cheech and Chong, Cypress Hill, Willie Nelson, Wiz Khalifa with a bong. The name of the game is Hemping, that's the point. Download and play while you light yourself a joint. The business of cannabis should be no crime. Hemp Inc. is even hot-proofed by the man who run High Times. Oh, yeah? Get it on Android and iOS today. Marijuana Llama out. Got to tend to me own crops, you know? Money don't make itself. Hemp Inc.
Trends in technology, processes, and products. We cover these areas and more on the cutting edge of cannabis. Be informed from the latest initiators of new innovation. Learn about the latest breakthroughs and best practices in the cannabis and hemp industries. Better products, better infrastructure, and better sustainability. The cutting edge of cannabis. Consulted by the American Cannabis Company.
We're back to Hemp Presents, only on Cannabis Radio. Now, back to our headstrong emperor of hemp, Vivian McPeak.
And we're back for our final questions for Jason Lammers. Jason, I just want to commend you for the amazing work that you're doing. It's so important, and I'm proud of the Alliance for having this committee and addressing these issues aggressively. I'm just curious, is there anything that we haven't covered so far while we still have a minute or two to talk that you'd like to add?
Sure. Yeah, I'll just kind of touch real quickly on what our committee is working on next. you know, we did get those packaging rules changed January of 2021 or 2020. And so our next big target is getting our plant waste rules fixed. We touched on that a little bit today. And for those that don't know, we have rules in place that require our growers to essentially make their plant waste rendered unusable or landfilled, essentially, which is extremely wasteful and just kind of a terrible policy all around. Colorado is actually getting their rules changed regarding this effective January of 2021. Maine actually got it right through their legislative process the first time around. So every state's got this problem other than those two I just mentioned, and we're one of them, but we were one of the first, and Colorado's finally getting their rules fixed as they've acknowledged it was really wasteful. Ultimately, that plant waste material we're talking about is your stalks, your stems, your leaves, your root balls. These types of things are organic materials. They test consistently below the 0.3% THC threshold. And so it's our view that we should really be not regulating the plant waste whatsoever and allowing our growers to deal with it in natural ways. And there's a lot of really exciting opportunities there. Just from a real simple perspective, you could obviously be composting this material. There's also a lot of potential economic benefits around it, though. We have, you know, people in the hemp space that are very interested in root balls and leaves for tinctures and medicinal type purposes. So it could actually be opportunities for growers to be selling their plant material. And then ultimately, if they're not, we should just be able to deal with it like any other grower would when you're dealing with plant material, right? We should be able to compost it. So that's our next big target that we're going to try to get tackled here by 2021 or in 2021 and get those rules changed so that we can actually do what we should have been doing from the start with our plant waste material. And beyond that, I would just really like to encourage anybody listening to get involved with the Cannabis Alliance or any other organization around sustainability. If you're not a cannabis person specifically and you just care about sustainability and all the problems we're dealing with around that, find an organization and get involved. You know, I got involved with the Cannabis Alliance about 4 years ago, and I've just been continuing to get more and more involved every year I've been a part of this group. Because I've seen the power that a good group of people coming together to work for improving things, the power that we have when we put our heads together and work on shared goals. And so I would just encourage anybody to, you know, get involved, join the Alliance, and, you know, join one of our committees. You know, we've got quite a few of them involved around a lot of issues, social justice, sustainability, many other factors. And it's just a great way to, you know, get out, get active, and start to speak up against what you see as something that bothers you.
Jason Lammers, General Manager at 420WholesalePack.com, Vice President of the Cannabis Alliance and Chair of the Sustainable Cannabis Committee. Thanks for being on Hemp Present.
Thanks for having me, Vivian.
You bet. Now to get to a weekly feature, Hemp Present on CannabisRadio.com. That's the quote of the week. It cannot be right to manufacture billions of objects that are used for a matter of minutes and then are with us for centuries. And that is English rower, environmental advocate, writer, and speaker, Roz Savage. That concludes this installment of Hemp Zone on Cannabis Radio. I want to thank Brasco, my man in the control room, and all of Cannabis Radio sponsors and advertisers. Join me next week for some more reefer repartee and cannabis confabulation with some special hemposapien on our journey to justice as we silence the violence, increase the peace, and promote unity in the cannabis community. With impunity, because when it comes to prohibition, you've got the right not to remain silent. Activism requires a voice. Find your voice and speak up for justice. Until then, my friends, stay strong, stand tall, and take it easy. Turn up the music, maestro, because I'm out. Marijuana.
The opinions expressed on this CannabisRadio.com program are those of the guests and hosts and do not necessarily reflect those of the staff and management of CannabisRadio.com. Any rebroadcast or redistribution without proper consent of CannabisRadio.com is prohibited.